The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Now, we'll have to wait and see, because they do have somebody in custody. We may have to wait and see what they say about why this happened. But it sounds like possible that the revolution has started in Wisconsin, starting with this Christmas parade. I did tell you that the initial person who reached out to me said that they believe that this has to do with the verdict.
That is a BLM activist. His name is Vaughn Mays, and I believe he recorded that Monday evening in Wisconsin, the scene of the crime on Sunday afternoon. And he's saying there, I think, that this Christmas parade, the attack on the parade by Daryl Brooks, it may be the beginning of the revolution. And he also said there at the end that it's tied to the Rittenhouse verdict. The fact that Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted last Friday of all five counts. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience right here the day before the long holiday weekend in the United States anyway, the Thanksgiving weekend. We're here today. We've got some subs filling in tomorrow and Friday, so hopefully you'll have an enjoyable next few days. And we had our Thanksgiving ball last night for Armstrong College, so everyone's a little bit more groggy today than usual, but lots of important material to get through on today's show. So Sunday night, when we're seeing the initial reports of this attack on that holiday parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, as soon as I was just in the living room with my wife, and as soon as it was reported that the not on the major networks, they waited a full 24 hours before they got around to the suspect. But as soon as those initial reports came in from some conservative sites that the suspect was black, I told my wife, I said, "Well, you can bet that we're not going to get the truth about this story from the mainstream media. We're going to have to go to certain conservative blogs, and most likely we're going to have to go over to the UK, the Daily Mail, to get to the truth, to get to the truth of what actually happened." We, as you've been hearing on this program this week, we're seeing a cover-up in real time. It's happening right before our eyes, and it continues. It continues. This morning, I just in fast-forwarding through Morning Joe, they mentioned that they'd get to the story at the top of the broadcast. But then it was 45 minutes into the first hour of that morning show before they got to Daryl Brooks. And it's a pretty big development. He makes his court appearance yesterday. Yesterday afternoon and evening, we heard about a little boy, another victim. 8 years old, an 8-year-old boy. He didn't survive his injuries. And so now six people slaughtered by this man, this black activist, this black supremacist, this BLM member that the major media says it's not connected to BLM at all. You compare what they tried to do with Rittenhouse, one little picture next to a proud guy or Proud Boys guy, and he's guilty. The whole movement's guilty. He gives an okay sign, and, well, suddenly that's a racist sign. If it's Rittenhouse, you know. It just illustrates a much larger problem with all of America. And yet, as I covered with you on yesterday's show, what have they been telling us? He's a lone wolf. He operated alone. We don't really know the motivations. We can't understand. We do know before he took his SUV and accelerated through the crowd. We do know that there was some kind of domestic disturbance, maybe a knife fight. You'll never hear anything more about those incidents. That was reported Monday and Tuesday in order to suggest that he was fleeing a crime scene and that what he did at that parade was really kind of an accident. And look, I'm not joking. That's not hyperbole. You can go through one report after another report and see the words accident and crash used over and again with the propagandists in the media. So Scarborough, his show, he gets to it 45 minutes in. And what was it? It was 2 minutes and 40 seconds, 160 seconds that they devoted to this case that happened just on Sunday. And now six people slaughtered, crushed by this SUV, crushed by this demon-possessed lunatic who has it all over his social media. Yeah, the white people, they're the enemy. And he loved Black Lives Matter. George Floyd, that sent him over the edge. 2 minutes and 40 seconds? Even after a little boy dies in the hospital yesterday? That's right. And no, and keep this in mind, too. It was a field reporter that did most of that segment. A journalist out on the field talking to some of the victims and so on. They had a little bit up on the screen about the suspect. At least they pointed him out this time. They showed some footage of him in court. But nobody back in the studio, not Joe Scarborough, not Mika, not any of the guests, no discussion. No discussion. And that 2 minute and 40 second segment was followed up by 12 minutes reporting, discussion, everything you could imagine on Ahmaud Arbery, his case that's winding down in I think Georgia or one of the Carolinas, somewhere in the southeast. So they're right up to speed on all the details with that. The truck of the shooter, by the way, has a Confederate flag, don't you know? So, and waxing eloquent, I mean, Scarborough, you get him on Arbery, he's got a lot to say, but not on the slaughter that happened Sunday. Nothing. Nothing to say. Nothing to say before or after the report. Nothing to say on the round table in between. Nothing. And as I say, you look at some of the appalling coverage. Associated Press, child is the sixth death in Waukesha parade crash. It was a parade crash. Did you know this? Did you want me to look up the word crash in the dictionary for you? Newsweek, Waukesha deadly Christmas parade crash. They're all saying this. They're all using this language. You see how they're trying to cover it up? You see how they're trying to blot it out? They're scrubbing it. I was going to say from history. It's not even history. It just happened. And already, it's a crash. Says here at CBS, the man accused of deadly Christmas parade crash in Waukesha makes his first court appearance. It was a crash. The dictionary, Collins Dictionary for crash. A crash is an accident in which a moving vehicle hits something and is damaged or destroyed. It's an accident. You know, there was a little clip. Chris sent me this just this morning. MSNBC on Monday, where a commentator on the segment actually used the word accident. I mean, that's even worse. That it was an accident. There was a tweet just now from NBC. The parade accident, it says. Just today. Just a few moments ago. Andy Ngo pointed this out on his Twitter feed. Says here from Cambridge, crash as a verb, if a vehicle crashes or someone crashes it is involved in an accident, usually a serious one, in which the vehicle is damaged and someone is hurt. Crash, you see, they associate it with an accident, at least with respect to when it's used for an automobile crash. I mean, nobody does it on purpose, so it's an accident. This is what they're reporting. Now, compare it with Charlottesville. You remember the guy that backed up his car into the crowd and killed one person? The Guardian. Charlottesville, white supremacist gets life sentence for fatal car attack. BBC, Charlottesville, attacker apologizes as he is jailed for life. Boston Globe, Charlottesville car attack 4 days ago foreshadowed a summer of violence in 2020. NBC, driver in deadly car attack at Charlottesville white nationalist rally pleads guilty to federal hate crimes. In every case, attack, attack, attack. You see, and the reason I bring this to your attention is they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. When they don't use the word attack and they use the word crash or accident, there's an agenda motivating it. Now you know, and I know, that nobody goes up to a crowd of people and accelerates. Nobody could call that a crash or an accident. That's an attack, and then some. And that's an attack coming from a black supremacist. And we went through some of the details of his social media posts in years past on yesterday's program. And as I say, you've got to go across the pond to the Daily Mail to get any more investigative reporting on the killer, the murderer, the mass murderer. This is the Daily Mail today. The suspect accused of plowing into a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and killing five on Sunday, shared social media posts promoting violence towards white people. Today, 8-year-old Jackson Sparks was named by relatives as the sixth victim, having died in the hospital from his injuries. It says, a now-deleted Facebook account belonging to Daryl Brooks Jr. showed the alleged killer had encouraged knocking white people the F out. Knock them out. It's a Facebook post. And also appeared to support the controversial black Hebrew Israelites. It says, Brooks was charged on Tuesday with five counts of first-degree intentional homicide and is expected to face more charges. Police are yet to determine the motive behind the deadly rampage. However, records reveal Brooks is a career criminal with a rap sheet dating back to 1999 and had been bailed twice this year. Facebook posts also show the amateur rapper who went by his stage name, Math Boy Fly, had shared a series of links and memes relating to race and white privilege in June of 2020 when protests erupted over the death of George Floyd. Talks about the victims in the Sunday attack. On June 9th, 2020, Brooks wrote, learned and taught behavior. So when we start back knocking white people TF out, I can't even read half of this, want to hear it. The old white people, too. Knock them out. Knock them out. Period, he says. And then he has the middle finger emoji to go with it. Just so that you know. He's serious. He's angry. He's filled with rage. It says Brooks's troubling track record has raised questions as to why he had been allowed on the streets. Among the brow-raising social media posts that surfaced on Tuesday is a meme about Adolf Hitler and the identity of the real Jews. The graphic, posted on November 2015, claimed Negroes are the true Hebrews and that America had moved false white Jews into a state of Israel. You would think Joe Scarborough might be a little interested in these kinds of postings if he was a serious, fair-minded journalist. Instead, they give 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And look, they made it to the Thanksgiving break, thankfully. They're not on the air tomorrow. They're going to be eating a big turkey dinner. They're not going without turkey like someone else in the media suggested for the ordinary sheeple that can't afford it. He'll have plenty of that, I'm sure, wherever he goes. But they made it. Thankfully, they made it. It was Monday. New York Times gave it page A17. Tuesday, give it a little coverage. I mean, we can't very well not cover it at all. We've got to cover our tracks so that we can at least say, look, hey, we covered that story. Then they get to Wednesday. 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And now it's probably gone forever. Now, maybe if there's more victims dying in the hospital, maybe they'll give it a little bit of token coverage, but you can be sure they are so thankful that they made it to Thanksgiving without having to actually get into this story and report the truth. You compare this track record going back to Mr. Brooks, all the Facebook posts that are now deleted, by the way, you compare it with Kyle Rittenhouse, who he handed his iPhone over. You know, he's a white supremacist, right? He handed his iPhone over to the prosecutors, gave them the password, said, here, have a look. Take a look at my phone. And what did they find about his white supremacist connections? They found nothing. And he's the white supremacist. And Mr. Brooks, he's just a suspect that happened to be involved in a crash. Listen to Jesse Waters from the other day about Rittenhouse and his acquittal, clip two.
But the media makes him look like some vigilante who's out on some racist killing spree, just using his white tears in order to literally beat a murder rap. So why do we have this? So it's because they do character assassination and psychological warfare. This kid, 17, turned his whole phone over to the prosecution. Now, a phone is really a window into someone's personality. At 17, the prosecution didn't bring up a meme, a group text, an account that he was following. There was nothing to make this kid look racially motivated at all. Yet the media, knowing this, still continued to slander him as a white supremacist. That's malicious and reckless, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. He's firing in self-defense. There's nothing racially motivating him. Even the guys he fired on, as we keep saying, were white. Here's a case in Washakoa, Wisconsin, where the perpetrator was clearly motivated by race. And yet it's covered up, isn't it? Of course it is. They scour through social media. They did this last year, following what happened in Kenosha. Rittenhouse. He loves the police. Blue Lives Matter. He showed support for the police. That's dangerous. He's got white supremacist leanings because he loves the cops. And meanwhile, You can barely look at Daryl Brooks' postings before they're deleted by Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And then the coverage, as I said the other day. What's worse, these communist killers or the communists in the media that cover them up, that bail them out of jail? Daily Beast, this is a tweet from a year ago. Speaking of Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old shooter's Facebook page showcased photos with Blue Lives Matter style pro-police slogans and imagery. Wow. Pro-police slogans? What a danger to society. I'm speaking as a fool. Pro-police slogans. That's what the Daily Beast thing. That's what the Daily Beast says. You need to know this. You need to know this about Rittenhouse. It says, as well as an Armalite rifle, similar to the one he appears to have been photographed carrying in Kenosha. So his social media postings show a rifle, and they show pro-police slogans. And meanwhile, what do Brooks's social media postings reveal? The Daily Beast had a tweet the other day, just this week. How big-time right-wing trolls Andy Ngo and Tim Pool tied the Waukesha killings to Black Lives Matter. You see, Andy Ngo and Tim Pool, they'll actually go and try to see what Brooks posted on Facebook before it gets deleted and then bring it to your attention. And now the Daily Beast says they're trolls. They're trying to make this connection to Black Lives Matter. They're dangerous. Andy Ngo needs to be blotted out. You see how it works? And you know what's even worse? I didn't get into this enough yesterday or Monday. It's been brought out at the conservative treehouse. But Sunday night, as the initial reports started to come in, I mean the Fed, the DOJ, the FBI, sprung into action. Not to get in there and to find out more about Daryl Brooks. They went to Waukesha to cover up the fact that this was racially motivated, this attack. They're working in cahoots with big tech. Scrub the social media sites. Blot it out. Let's get our allies in the media on the job. It's a crash. It's an accident. It's certainly not an attack, and it's definitely not racially motivated. We really don't know what motivated him. We just don't know. The domestic disturbance probably set him off, you know, fleeing the scene. And the cops have even pointed out that they weren't chasing him. He drove to that crowd. When will we find out, if we ever do, that there wasn't even a domestic disturbance? That it was just a premeditated attack? The more we go each day, the more obvious this is. And you know, it follows right on the heels of the media talking about Rittenhouse for weeks and weeks on end. He's guilty. He's a white supremacist. And then he's acquitted by a jury of his peers, all 12 of them, on all five counts. And it doesn't even stop the media. They're responsible for Waukesha. They're responsible. They incited the hatred following George Floyd and all through last summer, all through last year. They are responsible. And so this week, I mean, they're especially engaged in the cover-up because, well, they don't want to be tied to this massacre. Plenty more in the first 45 minutes of Morning Joe about January 6th. Yeah, more subpoenas. You know what I learned this morning on Morning Joe? I learned that the white supremacist movement, it's so much stronger today than it was on January 6th. It's growing in strength. The Proud Boys and all these other groups. Subpoenas are out for them. What did Mika say? It's so much stronger. And she replied, oh, frightening. She's frightened because of the threat of white supremacy, the greatest threat facing the United States of America. And this follows just 2-3 days after a black supremacist got into his car, pulled up to this holiday parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, just a little ways away from Kenosha. It was 2 days after the Rittenhouse acquittal. And he hit the accelerator and was swerving through the crowd, taking out old ladies, children. One child just died yesterday from the injuries sustained because of that attack. When we come back, we'll highlight a few more news items before we conclude today's program with a Bible study. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, we got into a little bit of that yesterday. But you can write us, you can email us, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. when you make your request. Don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
You know, when you think about that district attorney in Milwaukee who let Daryl Brooks out on $1,000 bail after he ran over his girlfriend or his wife or the mother of his child, he took his car a few weeks ago, rammed into his girlfriend, and then John Chisholm says, you know what, just give us $1,000 and you can go right back to the streets. It's easy to look at John Chisholm, and believe me, a lot of people in Waukesha are absolutely furious. They're out for this guy's head. How is that guy roaming the streets? How is he driving a car? It's easy, though, to look at John Chisholm and say, well, he's just a radical left-wing communist who's trying to reform the system in his Marxist ideology. But he's not alone. There's DAs like him all over the country. And then you've got the communists in Congress that are trying to put forward legislation to just open up the prison cells and to empty them out. Rashida Tlaib, if you've looked into the BREATHE Act, if you haven't, you should. This is from the website. This is the website that's proudly announcing, this is what we aim to do. It says, uprisings around the country changed what is possible. See, uprisings last summer made this movement to defund the police and to free criminals. It made it possible. What felt impossible 2 months ago is being accomplished now. What seems impossible today is doable tomorrow. I mean, they're excited, these communists. Listen to this from the bill. This is on page 21 of the bill. On decarceration, it says the Attorney General of the U.S. Department of Justice, consulting with the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, shall do the following. This would be the directive if the bill passes. Begin a process of BOP facility closure, that's prison facilities, closure that produces at least 50% population reduction within 5 years of the date that this act becomes law, and complete decarceration within 10 years of the date that this act becomes law. Complete decarceration in 10 years. Everybody, not someone that's in jail for selling marijuana. Well, I guess you wouldn't even be in jail for that today. But not a drug pusher. Not someone of you know, some petty crime. Murderers. Rapists. Everybody out. Everybody set free. I mean, they're putting this together with a straight face. They're, as you heard from the website quote, they're excited. Before last summer, this wouldn't even been possible. But now, the opportunities are endless. Rashida Tlaib, by the way, she had a sit-down with Axios recently. Listen to her. The Axios guy, he's a left-winger too, but he's kind of shocked by this. Listen to Tlaib as she defends this. She backs off just a little bit, but then she comes back pushing. Well, yeah, I'm proud of this. This is clip 4.
In 2020, you endorsed the BREATHE Act, which is a series of proposals to transform America's criminal justice system and create, quote, a roadmap for prison abolition. The BREATHE Act proposes emptying federal detention facilities within 10 years. To what extent have you wrestled with any potential downsides of releasing into society every single person who's currently in a federal prison?
Yeah, I think that everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to just release everybody. That's not
that's
what,
what
I'm
the-
Yeah, says, but did you see how many people are mentally ill that are in prison right now?
No, I know, but the act that you says release everyone
but
in 10 years.
But think about it. Who are releasing?
But there are like human traffickers.
Oh, I know.
Child sex. So, but you're saying, do you mean that you don't actually support that? Because you endorse the bill.
No, I endorse the BREATHE Act and looking at federal the policies and how we incarcerate. Absolutely.
But it says in there.
But you cannot. You cannot just blankly say, oh, look, she wants, that's not what I'm saying.
But that's like in plain text.
But what I'm saying is look at who's in prison now. No, look at the folks that are mentally ill, that have substance abuse problems.
But I'm not disagreeing with you that there are people who shouldn't be in prison.
Yeah, but then why aren't you asking me about them? You're asking me about the human traffickers and others that should
be able to be held accountable. What I'm trying to understand is your proposal is so sweeping. It does release everyone. And what I'm trying to say to you
within 10 years, and obviously there's a process of looking at how can we get away from mass incarceration.
Sure.
So there she is saying that, most of them are just mentally disturbed. And then in the end, I do support it. But that is my plan. To let everyone all across America out of prison. To empty the prisons. Decarcerate. And, I mean, it's possible now because the people have spoken. They've taken to the streets and they've burned down cities. So we've got a real opportunity here. This is, this is the current phase of the communist attack. It's all part of the attack. The soldiers are in prison. We got to release them so that they can take to the streets and carry out our objectives. These people, they're not operating alone. Daryl Brooks, he's not operating alone. Never mind what the major media says. That DA in Milwaukee, he said back in 2007, he told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, he wants prison reform. He's a radical leftist. He's the one that let Brooks out on $1,000 bail. And by the way, the judge set the bail yesterday for $5 million. How does he even have a chance to get out? He just rolled over 6 people and killed them. There are people who are still in jail for trespassing on January 6th. No bail options for them. No get out of jail for $1,000 so that you can then wait at home for your trial over trespassing. This killer, this demon-possessed murderer. Yes, $5 million's better. It's more than $1,000. Okay, but how is it even set at $5 million? What if Kamala comes along and gives them the $5 million like she did last summer to some of those thugs? Chisholm told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, "Is there going to be an individual I divert or let out? In other words, is there going to be an individual I divert or I put into treatment programs?" Who's going to go out and kill somebody? You bet. You bet. Guaranteed. It's guaranteed to happen. But it does not invalidate the overall approach. Can you believe this? That guy's the district attorney in Milwaukee. By letting some of these criminals out of prison, are they going to go and kill again? You bet they will. You bet they will. But hey, this is still a good program. He actually said that. It's quoted in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This is the way these people think. It's like the transgender policies in Loudoun County. Are girls going to be raped because of these new policies? Well, maybe one or two, but hey, it's a small price to pay. We got to put these policies in place. These people are communists through and through. And they're no longer even trying to hide it. You look at what's happened, and George Soros, his money behind all these district attorney races across the nation, most people don't pay any attention to them. Well, it's, the legislatures, the Congress, the governors, the DAs. I mean, nobody contributes to those political campaigns. Well, George Soros does because look at New York recently. They elected a mayor who's going to be tougher on crime, but their DA says that I'm not going to prosecute these crimes. Robbery, resisting arrest, those kinds of things. That's what they're doing in San Francisco. That's why there's a shoplifting epidemic. That's why, just a few days ago, 80 people were involved in this ring of shoplifting these stores, just lifting expensive merchandise right off the shelf and then heading for their cars, putting it in the trunk and taking off. They may be arrested, some of them. The police may arrest them, but they know that the district attorney has already spoken. Look, if it's under $1,000, it's not even gonna be a misdemeanor. This is happening all across the country. Cook County, well, there's examples here. I've gotten through some of this before about all of the funding that George Soros has provided. Jack Posobiec, he tweeted out today, this is from a 2017 op-ed, Soros put nearly $1.7 million in Philadelphia DA's race. So Soros got who he wanted, the communist. And then what are the headlines in Philadelphia today? This is from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Almost 500 people dead. Philadelphia is about to set a grim record for homicides. So don't prosecute. Or if you follow along with Rashida Tlaib, just open the prison cells and let them out. Let them do just let them go back out on the streets. Or let them off on $1,000 bail. That'll be fine. That's no problem. And then you see how our cities are just crime infested. People are waking up to this. Minorities, blacks in Chicago, for example. This is from the Chicago Tribune this week. As the black population continues to drop in Chicago and Illinois, few regret their move. It quotes one as saying, I have peace. Guess where some of these black families are moving? They're moving to red states. What? Red states are racist. Why would blacks move from Chicago to a red state? Because they don't want to get murdered. That's why. This is from the article by William Lee, talking about reverse migration in America. He says the so-called reverse migration out of Chicago has continued, lowering the city's black population by about 10%. A city that once drew tens of thousands of southern black residents and once held the nation's second largest black population seems to have lost its attraction for black folks who continue to leave. Chicago's black population dropped to 787,000 in 2020, its lowest total since the mid-1950s. The blacks in Chicago want to get out of Chicago. And they're going to be doing the same thing in San Francisco, unless they're the blacks that are looting the stores. And that's another thing that gets no coverage whatsoever. We can't talk about the color of these looters. But the ones who are obeying the laws, they want to get out of San Francisco and Chicago and New York. What a world. It says here in the article, southern states like Georgia, Texas, and Florida draw black residents from all over the country. After Indiana, Georgia, and Texas were the top destinations for black residents leaving Illinois each year between 2015 and 2019. You think Joe Scarborough is going to have a segment on blacks leaving Chicago for Texas and Georgia? Really? Of course not. Of course he won't. Where is this leading? Listen to, speaking of Joe Scarborough, he actually did sound the alarm on the shoplifting, on the lawlessness in cities like San Francisco. I mean, you know it's bad if it actually does work its way onto Scarborough's show. This is him from the other day, clip 3.
So, Joe, while some of these images, of course, are shocking to look at, they're absolutely not surprising to anyone who lives in San Francisco, given what's happened in the last few years there, which is the district attorney has signaled there, we're just not going to prosecute property crimes. We're going to do it at a much lower rate than it's ever been done. In fact, it will be a misdemeanor if you steal less than $950. That was a proposition, a referendum that passed in that city. All the signals, and it's not just San Francisco, but it's what we're talking about here, are that if you want to go in and steal stuff, we're going to sit back and let it happen, or at least we're not going to prosecute you after we catch you.
Well, I mean, it's in San Francisco. And by the way, I'm not sure what the mayor of San Francisco is talking about. We must stop this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been happening for a couple of years now. A good friend of ours went into a Louboutin store to get a pair of sweats. About 10 people stormed into the store, pulled out guns, and just started piling stuff into suitcases. It's been San Francisco is out of control. Portland is out of control. And you look, in part, you're right, Willie. I mean, laws have consequences.
Mm-hmm. San Francisco, Portland, out of control. Chicago, out of control. Blacks slaughtering blacks every weekend. 4, 5, 6 murders every weekend. And then you have what happened in Waukesha. And then you have the talking heads like him and those on his round table that want to incite race wars. And they're going to get their wish. That's what your Bible prophesies. My father had an article in 2016. I read this Monday, I believe. It says many prominent leaders, both black and white, are deliberately fueling those grievances for their own political gain. They're using race as a deadly weapon. The problems that will result are far more dangerous than they realize. See, they use race. With Rittenhouse, they use race. With the Ahmaud Arbery case, they use race. And then when it's one of their own that crushes 6 human beings, all of a sudden, race is out the window. Race has nothing to do with it. This is the way they operate. My father quotes from Herbert Armstrong, a Plain Truth article from March of 1969. Mr. Armstrong says, "Why are our people unable to recognize the communist line?" He's talking about root causes here. "The communist plan and conspiracy in college and university riots, in propaganda accusing police brutality and Black Power, Black Panther, and other slogans, even in civil disobedience and nonviolent movements of protests which lead to violence." He answered with this shocking truth. This is my father quoting Mr. Armstrong. "The guiding hand in student revolt is the Communist Party." See, it's the Communist Party manipulating these young people, telling them, you've got all this long list of grievances. You've got to take to the streets. You've got to burn. You've got to loot. And be assured, if you do get arrested, someone will bail you out. It might even be that if you go to prison, they'll let you go from prison eventually. So just burn and loot and destroy. This is what the communists want. It's all part of the revolution. It's all part of the attack. America under attack. Call our operators. If you haven't gotten this booklet, my father wrote it several years ago. It's as timely today as it ever was then. Our operators are standing by. 1-866-930-3024 and request America under attack, and also request to subscribe to our Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet. You can also go to thetrumpet.com if you want to request the free literature there. A few scriptures here before we conclude. This is 2 Timothy 3 and verse 13. It says, "But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived." You can see from verse 1 of this chapter that this is for the end time. This is for the last days. So it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. We can be grateful to God that the return of Jesus Christ happens at the end of this great tribulation that's coming upon us, that's coming upon our nations. That's our only hope, God's intervention. In fact, Matthew 24, Jesus said that if God didn't intervene, we'd just eventually wipe ourselves out. Can you even imagine it getting that bad? Well, look at the small little previews that we're getting, the ugliness of human nature, the violence that's on display, the hatred, the cover-ups, the lies, the deception. It's just all over the place. And why is that? Well, it's because of the devil. It's because there's a real spirit world, and the devil is deceptive. He's deceived the whole world, it says. I'll read that in a moment. But just back up to verse 7 in 2 Timothy 3, it says, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. The great paradox of our time, all of this materialistic knowledge, all of this wealth, a lot of these looters, they don't even need those goods. They're selling them on the black market. They're selling them on the streets. This is how they make their living, steal and then sell. Ever learning, but never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. In Mystery of the Ages, Herbert Armstrong writes, few stop to think about it, but when you do, could anything be wrapped in more mystery than this world's civilization? How do you explain the astonishing paradox, a world of human minds that can send astronauts to the moon and back, produce the marvels of science and technology, transplant human hearts, yet cannot solve simple human problems of family life and group relationships or peace between nations? They can't solve the simplest of problems. How do we stop shoplifters? We can't solve it. How do we stop out-of-control murder in Chicago? Can't stop it. So people are just leaving. They're going to places where they just feel a little safer. So pretty soon, though, we're going to be running or wanting to leave to somewhere that's safer, and we're going to realize there's not any safe places left. It says here in Mystery, we are born into this 20th century. He wrote this in 1985. We were born into this world. As it is, we take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what's occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events develop to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. And so he would often take his readers and his listeners back to Genesis 1, Genesis 2, Genesis 3. We've covered some of those passages even recently on this show. Those passages where the whole pattern for our very modern civilization were set. The pattern was set in Genesis 3 when God sent them forth and cut them off from the tree of life. Notice Revelation 12 and verse 9. This just basically tells you what should be obvious when you look at the world today. Revelation 12, 9, it says, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. The devil has deceived the whole world. It says in verse 10 that he accuses the brethren of God day and night. He just never stops with his vile accusations. He just fills this world with hatred and competition and strife and envy and bitterness. Notice 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 3, it says, but if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost. It's hidden, you see. It's like a thick, dark veil or cloud that obscures our vision. We can't see the truth. We can't understand or know the true gospel. Why? Verse 4, it says, in whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is in the image of God, should shine unto them. The God of this world has blinded the minds of men to the truth of the gospel. Verse 5 says, for we preach not ourselves, but Christ Jesus, the eternal, and ourselves your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness and shine in our hearts, to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Our minds have been blinded to the truth because of this God, the God of this world. Notice what we're supposed to do or what the admonition is for true Christians. John 6 and verse 44, of course, says that no man can come to Christ unless God calls him. And so if God makes that call, you got to respond. I mean, you don't have to. You're a free moral agent, but you should. If God opens your mind to the truth, you want to run with this. You want to go with this just as far as you possibly can in the direction of God. You don't want to drag your feet. You don't want to say, well, this sure is interesting knowledge, but I'm not really prepared to do anything with it. Well, why not? You want to put your faith and your hope in the things of this world, in the ways of this world? 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 17, it says, "Wherefore come out from among them, and be you separate, saith the Eternal, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." God's instruction to those who've had their minds open to the truth, he says, come out from among them. Come out of the world. Revelation 18:4, there's so many verses that speak to this. Don't love this world, 1 John 2. Don't hang on to this world and the things of this world. If we have a love for this world, we the love of God is not in us. Come out, it says. And then verse 18, and I will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Eternal Almighty. So you see, it's conditional. It's conditional for God to receive us as his children. We've got to come out of this world. Let me read to you what Herbert Armstrong said in the last year of his life. This is from a coworker letter, March the 11th, 1985. He says, God has called us out of the world. The world was kidnapped by Satan at the time of Adam's temptation. It says, for 8 days we shall enjoy a foretaste of the coming new world of God. He's talking about the celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles back in 1985. This time, that this festival that pictures the wonderful world of tomorrow, the establishment of God's kingdom on this earth. God's world, in other words. God really wants us. I had a number of programs a week or two or 3 weeks ago about vision, about seeing what's coming, and really setting our minds there so that we can be filled with hope and joy and goodness in a world that's just increasingly going dark, evil everywhere. It says, do we really understand that this is not God's world? This is Mr. Armstrong. He's writing to the church, God's family, in 1985, and he's saying, look, don't you understand this is not God's world? They should have understood, God's people, but so many of them didn't. So many of them just weren't grounded in Mystery of the Ages. This book that I quoted from just a moment ago, the final work of Mr. Armstrong's 50-year ministry. This is something that's basic. All of us should understand this. Do we really understand that this is not God's world? It is Satan's world. But have we not, most of us, let so much Protestantism rub off on us that we just sort of take for granted that this is God's world, God's civilization? But it's Satan's civilization. It always has been. It's not God's world, and so we don't want to be a part of it. Well, we have to live in the world. We have to make a living. We have to work. But we have to observe God's commands. We've got to keep the Sabbath command. We've got to obey the laws of God. We've got to build a family like God's family. But we can't be of this world. There's a difference. We in the church, we here at headquarters, it's a wonderful environment on campus. And of course, we have programs like this that go out to the world as a warning or a witness. But, and we're not certainly not indicating here that we're perfect in our purity, but we're striving for godly purity in all things. We must. We certainly don't want, just like it says in the parables, we don't want the weeds and things to choke the life of God out of our lives. The ways of the world, in other words, worldliness. As I just read to you in 2 Corinthians, come out from among them and be you separate. Separate yourself from the world and the ways of this world. I don't have time to get into Galatians 1, but Paul there, he marveled at how soon the brethren of God had turned to another gospel that wasn't the true gospel. It was a false gospel. It was a gospel of men. The true gospel concerns the soon coming kingdom of God, the soon coming return of Jesus Christ to this earth, and the establishment of God's kingdom all over the earth, a new world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily We certainly appreciate you joining us for today's show. If you'd like to email the program, you can write us td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.